The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'm going to be reading articles initially from the Harvard Heart Letter and then from the Harvard Health Letter. And we're continuing with the August 2022 issue of the Harvard Heart Letter. And the first article is entitled, Why Don't More People Know CPR? Shorter, more accessible training and help from technology may encourage more people to learn and administer this life-saving technique. Hands-only cardiopulmonary resuscitation, or CPR, can double a person's odds of surviving cardiac arrest when the heart suddenly stops beating, causing a person to collapse and stop breathing. But fewer than half of people who experience cardiac arrest outside of a hospital receive CPR from someone nearby. A recent scientific statement from the American Heart Association explored the reasons underlying this situation, which include lack of access to training and other barriers. 65% of people in the United States say they've received CPR training at some point in their lives, but only 18% are up to date on their training. Traditional CPR certification takes time and requires traveling to attend in-person classes. Dr. Eric Goralnik, Associate Professor of Emergency Medicine at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital, says, You can now do some of the training online, taking the classes whenever it works for your schedule. But it needs to be made even easier and meet people where they are, he says. Just over 75% of young adults who did a single 20-minute CPR training session, either face-to-face or with virtual reality, said they'd be willing to perform CPR on a stranger when asked 6 months after the training, according to a study published May 19, 2022, by JAMA Network Open. The training took place in tandem with a large music festival in the Netherlands. 1 in 6 of the study participants went on to take a formal CPR class. 2/3 said they told at least one family member or friend about the importance of CPR. Note, however, that about 4 in 5 out-of-hospital cardiac arrests happen at home, which means the life you potentially save with CPR is more likely to be a loved one or someone you know, rather than a stranger. Aside from a lack of training, another potential barrier to performing CPR is not recognizing cardiac arrest symptoms. Cardiac arrest has 2 key features. The first is sudden loss of responsiveness. The person doesn't react if you loudly say, "Are you okay?" and firmly shake their shoulders. Also, there is no normal breathing. Look for the rise and fall of their chest, or put your face close to their nose and mouth to listen for breath. Labored, irregular breathing that sounds like snorting or gasping, known as agonal breathing, is not uncommon. But agonal breathing doesn't provide adequate oxygen to the brain. Earlier guidelines advised people to check for a pulse, but that's no longer recommended. If the person is unresponsive, fast action is more important. First, you need to call 911 or tell someone nearby to do so. Then start CPR. During a crisis, it's hard to think straight, but the basic instructions are simple. Push hard and fast in the middle of the person's chest. What are the common mistakes? Incorrect hand placement is one possible error. Place the heel of one hand on the center of the person's chest, right over the breastbone between the nipples. Many people put their hands over the person's stomach instead of their heart, says Dr. Goralnik. Place the heel of the other hand on top of the first hand and lace your fingers together. Position your shoulders directly above your hands and push down, keeping your arms straight. Compressions that are too shallow are another common problem. Use your body weight to compress the chest at least 2 inches. But the most frequent mistake is giving compressions too slow or too fast. You want them to be 100 to 120 per minute. The rhythm of the 70s disco anthem Staying Alive is a good guide for timing your compression. The New York Presbyterian Hospital created a list of songs with similar beats. See the playlist at www.nyp.org/CPR. There's no substitute for the hands-on practice of an in-person class to give you a sense of the correct pressure and rate of compressions. But even being familiar with the basics of CPR is better than nothing. See this one-minute video from the AHA at www.heart.org, hands-only CPR. Many 911 operators are trained to provide verbal cues for CPR. So if you reach a trained operator, put your phone on speaker. He or she will help you administer the compressions at the correct rate. Using a video live stream on a smartphone to provide even more assistance to people giving CPR is another promising technology that's currently being studied. The next article in the Harvard Heart Letter of August 2022 is entitled Artificial Intelligence Advancing into Cardiology. Can machine learning improve the diagnosis and treatment of heart disease? It's too soon to know for certain, but many promising tools are in the works. If you have a smartphone, the pictures you take with it are automatically enhanced by software that's been taught to make your picture appear sharper and brighter by analyzing thousands and thousands of similar photos. This type of machine learning, a key aspect of artificial intelligence, is similar to what's happening in cardiovascular care. But instead of studying photos, the programs analyze images from chest CT scans, ultrasound images of the heart, and tracings of the heart's electrical activity, which is called electrocardiograms. We now have tools that can make in vast amounts of many types of data, including numbers, images, and even sounds, says Dr. Michael Liu, Director of Artificial Intelligence for the Cardiovascular Imaging Research Center at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General. Machine learning models create with this data can identify patterns that may help physicians make more accurate decisions about diagnosing and treating heart disease. Predicting risk from CT scans. One example is an advanced machine learning system that can predict cardiovascular risk from ordinary chest CT scans. Dr. Liu and colleagues from the Harvard Artificial Intelligence and Medicine Program described such a system in a study published last year in Nature Communications. The system, which uses the scans to measure risky calcium buildup in the heart's arteries, was trained using data from the long-running Framingham Heart Study, then validated on more than 20,000 people from 3 other clinical trials. If you get a CT scan to diagnose a cough, the image contains other potentially useful information about your future risk of heart disease or cancer, says Dr. Liu. In the future, a machine learning tool could be running in the background and alert your doctor that you should be taking a cholesterol-lowering statin to reduce your risk of heart disease, for example. Will this tool or others in development actually improve heart-related outcomes beyond what doctors normally do? We won't know until they're tested in clinical trials, says Dr. Liu. In addition, like any new technology, such a tool has to receive FDA approval before it's used in routine practice. That's an involved, costly process that usually requires the resources of a company or a hospital, says Dr. Liu. Near this article is another brief article entitled On the Horizon, AI in Cardiovascular Care. Researchers are using AI to predict heart problems in a number of novel ways, including the following. Severe coronary artery disease. A team led by Oxford researchers created an artificial intelligence tool that may detect severe coronary artery disease from stress echocardiography, a common non-invasive test, with greater accuracy and confidence. Weakened left ventricle. Using the single-lead electrocardiogram function on Apple Watch, Mayo Clinic researchers created an AI-based tool that may detect a weak heart pump, a condition known as left ventricular dysfunction. Multiple heart rhythm disorders. Yale researchers developed an AI model that may enable doctors to diagnose atrial fibrillation, left and right bundle branch block, and other heart rhythm and conduction disorders using electrocardiograms in different formats and layouts, including those collected from remote healthcare settings. Heart valve disease. A California-based company created AI-based platforms that, when used with the company's digital stethoscope, improve the detection of heart murmurs, which may indicate heart valve disease or structural heart problems. Dangerous heart rhythms. By combining images that show scarring in a person's heart, along with characteristics like age and weight, scientists at Johns Hopkins University created a neural network that may predict if and when a person could die of cardiac arrest. Now we're going to go on to the Harvard Health Letter, and this is the Harvard Health Letter of August 2022, and the first article is called Spotting Memory Loss in a Loved One. You know a lot about health of your loved ones, but would you recognize if a loved one had memory loss? It's not always easy. You're less likely to notice cognitive changes if you're with a family member every day. It's more obvious when you see the person infrequently, says Dana Kelly, a neuropsychologist who specializes in dementia disorders at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. Age does a number on the memory. Normal age-related changes make it harder to focus and recall details. The complaints I hear often are that people sometimes forget why they walked into a room or can't remember the name of an acquaintance. Those aren't red flags for cognitive disorders, Kelly says. More concerning would be people who are frequently forgetting a close family member's name, important conversations, words for everyday objects, bills that are due, medication time or doses, and routes home from familiar destinations. It can be hard to detect a potentially serious type of memory loss in a loved one. You might not be in a position to observe certain changes. You may not realize that a family member is having trouble at work, making frequent financial mistakes, falling for financial scams, or taking medications incorrectly, Kelly says. And no one wants to believe that a loved one has cognitive decline, so we might ignore certain signs. To sharpen your ability to detect memory loss in a loved one, Kelly suggests noting incidents that happen consistently or those that seem uncharacteristic for your loved one. It may help to track the incidents on a calendar to find patterns. Memory loss symptoms don't automatically mean that your loved one has dementia. Memory problems could come from other health-related issues like chronic stress, medication side effects, or an underlying health problem like sleep apnea. Those conditions can be treated, potentially reversing memory loss. But sometimes memory loss is a sign of either mild cognitive impairment or full-blown dementia like Alzheimer's disease or vascular dementia caused by reduced blood flow to the brain from plaque in the arteries. Beyond memory loss, dementia symptoms can include problems producing speech or understanding language, mood, or personality changes, unusual behavior like wearing too many clothes, and difficulty with the type of mental abilities called executive function. Things like multitasking, decision-making, problem-solving, and planning. If you suspect memory loss, talking to loved ones about memory loss can be difficult. Try to be gentle and respectful. Tell them you've noticed they seem more forgetful than usual, less organized than they once were, or less able to get sentences out. Explain that you just want to know if they're okay and that you want to help, Kelly advises. If your loved one has also noticed those changes, you can talk about how to proceed. But brace for the possibility that your loved one might feel angry that you're pointing out mistakes, and that it may feel like an attack on intelligence or sanity. How do you respond? Kelly recommends making these points. First, not all memory loss is permanent. Secondly, a doctor can help uncover other causes which might be reversible. Finally, a brain checkup as we age is as normal as a heart or vision checkup. The first step in evaluating a possible memory problem is a visit to your loved one's primary care provider. It can help if you and other family members are present. Share your observations from the last month, year, or years, Kelly says. If there seems to have been a change over time, the healthcare provider may administer a 5-minute screening test. Based on the results, the clinician may recommend either keeping an eye on symptoms or getting more tests like blood work and brain scans like a CT scan or MRI scan. The provider may also refer your loved one to a neuropsychologist who diagnoses cognitive disorders or a neurologist who treats brain disorders. These experts may order cognition tests. If there's a diagnosis of MCI or dementia, your assistance will be crucial. Give your loved one space to process the diagnosis and ask how you can support them, Kelly says. She also recommends making a plan for the future, especially financially, if the condition is progressive. Evaluate if your loved one needs help managing medications, driving, cooking, cleaning, or running errands. Seek support from friends, family, or support groups. A diagnosis can feel isolating, Kelly says. Remind your loved one that this is the time to lean on family and friends, and that staying socially connected, not socially isolated, will help get you both through this. Now we're going to go to a related story, which is in the section called Ask the Doctor by Dr. Anthony L. Komaroff. And the question is, do blood tests help diagnose Alzheimer's disease? Question. I hear there are new blood tests to help diagnose Alzheimer's disease. Is that true? Do they really help? And Dr. Komaroff responds, several types of tests can help doctors diagnose Alzheimer's disease. That may not sound like a big deal, but when I was a young physician, the only way to diagnose Alzheimer's was to examine the brain after a person died. That's too late. Formal tests of how well a person is thinking have been available for decades and can help provide objective evidence of cognitive problems. If these tests show nothing wrong, Alzheimer's or other dementias are unlikely. If the testing does show abnormalities, then while it could be Alzheimer's or another dementia, it also is possible that another disease that is reversible is affecting thinking. For example, an underactive thyroid gland, or low levels of vitamin B12, unsuspected sleep apnea, or medication side effects can cause cognitive problems. CT, or MRI, which is magnetic resonance imaging, and PET, or positron emission tomography brain scans, can also help diagnose Alzheimer's and other dementias. They are expensive, may involve exposure to radiation, and can be unpleasant experiences for people with claustrophobia. Traditional CT and MRI can show shrinkage in certain areas of the brain. PET scans can show that there are excessive amounts of two proteins, amyloid beta and tau. These two proteins are very important markers of Alzheimer's, but until recently we couldn't see them in the brain of a living person. PET imaging is most useful when cognitive problems that could be caused by Alzheimer's are still subtle. When the problems are more pronounced and everything points to the unfortunate diagnosis of Alzheimer's, PET scans have limited value. Amyloid beta and tau can also be measured in spinal fluid, and this can be helpful in making the diagnosis. This requires a doctor perform a spinal tap, which can be uncomfortable and briefly painful. As you may have heard, in May of 2022, the FDA approved a blood test for Alzheimer's based on the amyloid beta protein. It is quite accurate when compared with the more expensive and complicated PET scan. Several other blood tests, including for tau protein, are also under development. What's the value of a test that helps diagnose a disease that currently has no cure? Learning early that what you feared is true can be a shock, but it can also help you to plan for support services and future finances and keep you independent longer. It's possible that within a decade we will have treatment that prevents Alzheimer's from getting worse if we can catch it early. Now I'm going to turn to news briefs. This is, again, is in the Harvard Health Letter of August 2022. And the first news brief is Living Longer Without Dementia. A long-term study offers hope that a healthy lifestyle not only extends your life, but also extends the years that you'll live free of dementia. The study, published online April 13, 2022, collected 20 years of information on the cognitive health and lifestyle habits of 2,500 people age 65 or older. Researchers came up with a healthy lifestyle score based on five factors: eating a plant-based diet, doing activities that challenge the brain, like playing cards, crossword puzzles, or visiting the museum, exercising for 150 minutes per week, not smoking, and drinking only in moderation, which means one drink per day for women, two drinks for men. Women age 65 with four or five healthy lifestyle factors had a life expectancy of 24 more years and live 3 years longer than women with one or no healthy lifestyle factors. Men age 65 with four or five healthy lifestyle factors had a life expectancy of 23 more years, which was almost 6 years longer than men with one or no healthy lifestyle factors. Men and women with healthy lifestyles also cut in half the number of years living with Alzheimer's disease compared with men and women who didn't have healthy lifestyles. The study was observational and doesn't prove that healthy habits give you more years without dementia, but lots of other evidence suggests a healthy lifestyle will increase lifespan and protect the brain. Does your advance directive really capture your wishes? An advance directive does two things. It lays out the medical care you want if you're unable to make your own health decisions, and it names the person you'll want to make those decisions for you. Too often, those documents don't reflect a person's actual wishes. Researchers interviewed 20 people aged 65 and older who had advanced care directives. Participants also had serious chronic illness. During the interviews, scientists found some common themes. The participants felt they'd completed generic legal forms and couldn't remember the details of the forms, or didn't think any further about the care plans the forms laid out. Some participants also said it was unnecessary to revisit the actual plans, even though they hadn't considered care goals based on their values and benefits. Just remember, an advanced care directive is only one part of the plan for your future care. It should hinge on personal reflection and frank discussion with your loved ones and doctors about the type of care important to you. Know that it's not too late to change the terms of your plan if you want to. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I sure hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.